Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Welcome back. Ruined.
We can't afford that. Don't start singing.
I know.
That.
Every time I want to sing, I'm like, oh my God.
I know. Oh my God.
Guys, I'm Hallie.
And I'm Allison. And this is Ruined.
Thanks for joining us once
That's
again.
It. That's the podcast.
Yeah, just us bumbling through. This is a podcast, of course, where we ruin a horror movie for you each week, every week. And
every week.
We've also been reading your wonderful tweets and emails. And thoughts and
yes.
prayers. So
not a lot of prayers. We have a question this week. We're working through all of our questions that we get. You guys send so many, and we're so glad to get to all of them. This is from Nell S., friend of the pod. And she asked, the lyrics in the opening theme song claim the point of the show is, so you'll never have to have a spooky time. But then you end every episode by telling me to keep it spooky. Which is it? It's a valid question.
This is a great question. No, thank you.
It is. It gives us a chance to plug our incredible theme song by our friend Matt Bouchel.
Shout out to Matt. Here are my thoughts on this now. And I think this question, excellent. Mm-hmm. And it speaks to the dichotomy that exists within our podcast, which is I want you to have a spooky time because I want you to listen to the podcast. Mm-hmm. However, mm-hmm. I understand mm-hmm. that you don't want to have a spooky time. And yet feel compelled to have one. So I feel like this,
yes.
the two competing instructions mm-hmm. are exactly for the listener who doesn't want to watch it, doesn't want to be scared, but cannot
yes.
help themselves, which is, Allison, this is your lived experience.
This is me. I'm both spooky and unspooky all the time. I'm living in the space between spooky and not spooky.
The space between. Okay, don't tell Dave Matthews.
Dave
I'm sorry.
Matthews seems litigious.
I mean, yeah, they need money after they lost it for unloading their tour bus toilet on that bridge in Chicago.
Oh, yeah, in Chicago on a boat.
So they probably want every dollar they can get from us.
Yeah, they need it. I do think that we both want everyone to have a spooky time and to keep it spooky, but we don't want you to have to live a spooky. Getting away from it. It's really
no.
This is some high level consciousness we're talking about.
Especially for people who barely remember their own names, nor the email address that you can contact us with. we're worms, and
I'm a worm.
We're getting
yeah.
through.
Yeah,
and we're here to satisfy the push and the pull, the lemon and the lime that is
we
your
are what
experience
comes
with horror
between not having a spooky time and keeping it spooky. In that between those two things is ruined.
Exactly. Please listen to the Dave Matthews Band song in order to understand exactly what we're talking about.
Yes, it really speaks to who we are and what we're all about.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Nell.
Well, thank you.
And with that in mind, we're going to keep our Pride films going. And
yes.
I just wanted to say that, you know, we as a society have really done a disservice to all of us by not making a ton of horror movies that star specifically gay men because...
Yes.
There are a lot of both good and bad horror movies that feature women who love women,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether they mm-hmm. are self-identified as such in the movie or they're having experiences that, you know, I think as a viewer, you're like, ah, I recognize those. And it is only till recently that I feel like having a gay couple, a gay romance, a specifically gay male experience in a horror movie or in movies in general, it's so new that I really wanted to have for this month, have a movie about specifically gay men. And just to chide society and tell them to pull it together, because I want way more horror movies featuring gay men than are currently available.
I am like surprised and not surprised that there are not many. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it seems like there should be, it seems like what a great world to play in, what great characters you can have. Like, it seems so fitting for horror, like, but at the same time, you know, we are behind in understanding how to tell stories that go beyond heterosexual and specifically like male heterosexual gaze and life experience. So
yeah, and I'd like to think
there.
Yes, we are moving forwards. We're going past the point where maybe you could have one character, but they have two lines, and then you know they're the first one killed, or you know, which is an issue in the genre with every kind of minority. You know, like you know, at the end of the day, it's about a screaming cisgendered straight white woman, you know, that has been the template for so long.
Yes, it's true.
So we want to do this movie. This is 2019's Spiral, in order to have some men who love men included in our month's coverage. And I wanted to say specifically that it is the 2019 Spiral. It is not this year's Spiral, from the Book of Saw, starring Chris Rock. We will eventually do that, but that is not a part of our Pride coverage. And I will say, the only similarities between these two movies is I don't know if I understand what the spiral means in the title.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And this is, again, I am a worm and my brain is the brain of a worm. So I just didn't understand it. So we're going to get there. And at the end, Allison, maybe you could unpack for me what you think
it might.
Yeah,
I'm sure I'll have a great grasp of what it means.
So let us begin. We always like to have Allison watch the trailer. So I sent her the trailer for 2019's Spiral. Allison, what do you think?
I mean, I think this looks scary. The way this is shot is like the kind of like, this is the like style of directing and like cinematography that I think is just like the scariest, because it is very based in realism. Like, it doesn't seem like you're just getting like kind of muted but natural colors. Like, it's not like super blown out. Like, so it's just like, oh, this could really happen. Even though, like, of course, that's not true, I hope. But it does, it looks great. The trailer is objectively pretty scary. And I would say that not all of the trailers are always like the most horrific, but this one really, I was like, I'm on comfies.
Yeah, absolutely. And we always like to take a baseline scary, and I didn't exactly know how to phrase this, but how scary do you find the concept of somebody leveraging prejudice against specific people? So sort of like using your knowledge of how society operates and the biases in order to specifically target specific people. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, terrible.
Not good.
Bad.
Not good at all.
That's not good. It also becomes, like, I think why this feels so scary is that like the reality of homophobia is still very real and present and dark and violent, that like, even though we're going to deal in, I think, something kind of like occultish and like out, like totally like made up and outside of our realm, like the reality of oppression is still very, very real. And when you're like mixing those two is when you're like, extra scary, because it feels much more realistic and possible.
And I think that's, you know, especially with like recent movies and TV shows, I feel like that's sort of been a question, is like, how do you make horror that's about something that is inherently horrifying? And not, you know, something, like, there's certain horror things that we all agree is like, okay, a serial killer with a chainsaw, scary, but in a very specific way. Versus a movie about, say, racism or misogyny or something, that it's like, you're using a inescapable system to make entertainment. Yes. How do you do that in a way where it's not like, well, I'm just watching people be brutalized as somebody perhaps in that minority. I don't want to have to watch that. So before we begin to spoil 2019 Spiral, Allison, what do you think the twist will be?
Guess the twist.
Well, I think it's going to have to do with the spiral based on the trailer and also your lack of understanding of it.
Absolutely.
Yes, it seems like something about a ritual that's happening. And again, I like to think that the twist, like I always think of the twist as like the reveal of like the reasoning for something or the explanation of why it's been happening this whole time. So I like to think that hopefully that's the twist because that's satisfying.
Yeah.
But also like maybe like surprise, someone else is also gay, which it won't be.
No, it's not a fun surprise. I'll tell you that much.
Nope.
Okay, I will accept that. As I've already, I'm going to force you to explain the spiral to me. So let us begin.
We'll do our best. Okay, great.
By ruining 2019 Spiral. It is a Canadian horror film.
The twist. It's Canadian.
The twist. Directed by Curtis David Harder, and it stars Jeffrey Bower Chapman as Malik and Ari Cohen as Aaron. And they are a same-sex couple. They are moving to a small town, is the premise. And let us begin. Okay. We open on December 12th, 1983. And we see a young black man and a young white man. They're in the backseat of a car parked in a snowy parking lot. And they are making out. And ominously, a car pulls into the parking lot and shines their headlights in through the windshield. Next thing you know, we see the young white man. He is being beaten bloody on the ground as the young black man is screaming for help in the backseat of this car. Cut to, it is December 7th, 12 years later, it is 1995. And we see the young black man who is now older. His name is Malik. And he is in the passenger seat of the car with his current partner, Aaron, who is also white. And Malik is lost in his...
Oh, so that was not the same man.
No. So that was his first boyfriend.
Okay, that was... Okay, so that's like... Okay, got it.
Yeah, so this is sort of
part of
like,
his history. Yeah.
Yes. He went through this incredibly traumatic thing. Hate crime was committed against him and his boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they're supposed to be like teenagers or just like early 20s, but younger.
Just young.
And now he's older. He is has been dating Aaron for 2 years, and he is moving with Aaron and Aaron's teenage daughter, Kayla, to their new home in the country. And I kept trying to figure out, like, where are we? I'm like, is this Idaho? Because it's like very beautiful, but also like there's mountains. It looks like... It was like, it looks like Idaho, but then like the geography was different. So it turns out it was shot in Alberta, so which makes sense. So it's like very beautiful, but freezing.
Yes.
Gorgeous sort of like austere, like gray, like mountain ranges. And there, Aaron has gotten a new job. So they're driving to this smaller town. They're very excited. They bought this house. Kayla has like a very like, fuck you, dad. You don't tell me what to do type of energy, as we all did in high school.
Yes.
And she's sort of closer to Malik as, like, the boyfriend because he's a step-parent. He's not her actual dad. And I feel like that's a very common thing where it's like, I could deal with you because you're not my parent, but if my dad tells me to pick up my room, I will lose my shit immediately.
Yes. Yes.
And they're driving into town, and as they're driving in, they sort of have this, like, sweet moment, and they Malik and Aaron hold hands on the center console, and then something slams into their windshield, and the windshield breaks in a spiral pattern. And I don't know what was on the windshield. Because at first I saw it, I'm like, did somebody throw a brick at the windshield? But then I watched it again. I'm like, was it a bird? Either way.
Yeah.
Perturbing.
Mm. Yes, very.
So we begin. We arrive at their new home. Gorgeous. It's very Frank Lloyd Wright. Like a lot of like vertical wood and like big, beautiful windows. Home ownership.
Love.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about a fantasy. Something and that's never going
to
happen.
That's what's underlying this. It's like, listen, what do you, you want to own a home? Where are you going to have to live? You're going to have to live in some weird little town with weird people.
Yeah.
And so they're eating pizza on the floor because they don't have their furniture set up yet. And Malik's telling Kayla about meeting his, losing his virginity, like in his 20s. And he went to some big party. I think we're supposed to be like in New York, like some like gigantic converted church. And he met this guy and he was a huge asshole, but like he just immediately fell in love with him. And he says of Kayla's dad, Aaron, it's like, actually, they were all assholes until I met your dad. And it's sort of like, oh, that's, you know, that's so sweet. And he, but as soon as Aaron, like, tries to say anything, Kayla's like, God, dad. Like, she's like, oh, dad, like, did you lose your virginity to mom? Like, you know, and he's like, actually, I did. And I was 1,000 years old when I lost my virginity, which is how old you will be when you lose your virginity. And she's like, oh, my God. Like, Malik's like
dad.
The cool sort of like, you know, like stepdad. And her dad is just like, I swear to God, if you talk to me about anything, you know, I will absolutely lose my shit. And we find out that basically, Aaron and his ex-wife divorced, and then during the divorce, she sort of just bailed. You know, like, she fought him and then left, and Kayla feels very abandoned and blames her father, who has obviously since come out. But there's a lot of hard feelings from the divorce. And then on top of it, they're moving to the middle of nowhere, and she has, like, 2 years left of high school. So she's moving in the middle of high school. She has a boyfriend named Derek back home, and she's, like, talking to him on the phone, like, oh, my God, I can't believe this happened, you know. My life is over.
Yeah. I mean, fair.
And so they're, you know, as they clean up, Malik and Aaron are discussing, like, Kayla's bad attitude. Malik's like, I understand, like, this is about her mother, and once she starts school, like, she'll make friends. And it's like, yeah, everyone loves making friends as the new kid. Like, dream on, Malik.
Yeah. In high school? Yeah.
Jesus, yeah. And, you know, like, but they're having, like, a, we're all going to work together, and, like, we're going to make this work, our new life here in their gorgeous new house, and Aaron starts this new job tomorrow. So he's basically like, I don't even have time to unpack with you. So Malik is sort of left to unpack the house, and he's also does a lot of freelance writing. They set up their gigantic 1995 desktop computer.
Talk about a horror. Freelancing.
I mean, especially in 1995, I'm like, what is their internet like out there? Oh, like, God. In our house, like, we were in a rural area. Like, we didn't really, we had dial-up. So, like, we didn't really have, like, actual internet
until
I was
in
high school. Yeah, but I just mean, like, it was so slow. You know what I mean? Like, to think, like, oh, you're going to work remotely. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe Canada's different. I hope it is.
Maybe Canada's different.
So Malik's in the morning is unpacking the house, and he's having Kayla help him, and she's taking Polaroids of herself. She's, like, very into Polaroids. And she's like doing her makeup and taking pictures of herself instead of helping unpack the house, which is what you should do as a teen. That's the right thing.
Absolutely correct. Then and now.
Yeah. And they kind of distract themselves by looking through photo albums. And Malik shows Kayla like photos of him when he was first start dating her dad. And there's a photo of them in drag. And Kayla's like, oh, my dad in a dress. Like, oh, my God. And Malik tells her like,
believe me, and choosing to live your life loud and proud is about the bravest thing you can do in this world.
And Kayla's like, I get that. Like, she seems very open to that from Malik. While he's unpacking, he finds a pair of shattered eyeglasses. And we realize that they belong to the boyfriend who was attacked during this hate crime.
Aww.
So he saved the glasses. And when he goes to take out the garbage, Malik finds an older white man named Mr. Reinhardt standing at the end of his driveway facing their house, staring at Malik. And so Malik tries to say hi.
Nope.
Mr. Reinhardt just turns away and walks back to his house. No. So Malik's like, all right, here we go.
I'd be like, don't even finish unpacking. We are out of here. Like, put everything back in the truck. We're leaving.
And so then it's like, I'm sure Malik is like, is it because we're gay? Is it because I'm black? Is it both? Right. Is it because we have a kid? Is it because they're new? You know, like, you don't know, like, is he just weird? You know? Like,
any and all.
Yeah. So that night we hear Kayla's talking to her boyfriend, Derek, and it's like, oh my God, we had to move. And, you know, her dad comes in to be like, oh, I'll help you set up your room. And she's like, I'm on the phone. Get out of my room. In a very fun way. Unfortunately, when Aaron steps out into the hallway, he hears Kayla tell, Derek tell Kayla, like, you know, like, not to say anything bad about your dads, but, like, if I were you, like, I wouldn't share a glass with them, you know, because you never know. So, ostensibly, out of the fear that one or both of them has HIV and that Kayla shouldn't share a glass with them because she'll contract it. And this is just me. I don't know how things were in Canada, but as someone who grew up in the 90s, I feel like we talked about HIV and AIDS constantly.
Constantly.
And we knew, at least as a child, like Kayla would know from her public school education, hopefully, or maybe she went to a private school, she doesn't know any of this, that you can't get HIV that way, that it is a sexually transmitted disease. And so I feel like I was like, that's the one thing where like, I don't know. I was like, would Derek think that? But I guess there were obviously going to be people who were still prejudiced into the 90s.
Yeah, I think like you could say into the 90s there were still people. Like I remember there were a lot of PSAs that were like, hey, like you can hug, you know, people that are HIV positive and that's not dangerous. It's okay to kiss. Yeah. Like there was like, here's all the things you can do. Like,
yeah.
Which is everything short of course, the way that you actually contract AIDS or HIV. But like, I think that, like, because those PSAs existed then, that meant that there was still, like, a lot of minds to change, unfortunately.
Yeah, and obviously we live in a totally different era when it comes to HIV/AIDS. So it's like, I'm just trying to, like, you know, even remember what we were taught. But in my mind, it was always, like, Sinbad dressed in a condom costume telling us about safe sex. But just to lay out that, like, there are people in the world who are still, like, that's their approach to seeing a gay couple. It's like, oh, well, one or both of them is HIV. They're going to give it to you by sharing a cup, even though that is, of course, not real.
Not how you get it.
Malik sets up his giant desktop computer, and we find out that he's ghostwriting a biography of this, like, conservative psychologist and has to listen to all this, like, demented, awful, like, stuff about, like, American values and, like, which obviously it is implied do not include an interracial gay marriage. You know, like,
no,
that.
Absolutely.
Listen,
not. Yeah.
You'd think having a family would be a positive thing, not to these people. So, not only does he have to do this, like, thankless work while he's trying to get his own writing done, you know, like, his career started, he has to listen to this horrible shit. But I get it. I've worked freelance too. You got to take whatever work you can get, you know.
Yeah. I ghost wrote for a cellulite treatment company. I didn't love it.
Right, but did you get free cellulite treatment?
No, but they did pay us way too much money.
That I remember this. Man.
Yeah.
Get that money. Get that money.
I was happy to sell out. You know, sometimes selling out is the goal.
So in the middle of the night, Malik hears this thumping, banging sound, and he checks on Kayla. She's fine. And then slowly goes downstairs. Luckily, it is just a tree branch slamming against a window.
Always.
And in the morning, he goes outside first thing, and he trims the tree, and he cuts down the branch. And just then, Tiffany, their neighbor to the side, stops by with a plant. And Erin answers the door. She's like, oh, sorry to come by so early. I just saw your gardener was working, so I assumed you were up. And Erin's like, no, that's not my gardener. That's my husband. Don't you, like, be cool, you know? And he's like, no, this is my partner, Malik. And Tiffany says, wow, that's so exciting. Mm. We don't have any of you in town. And Malik's like, oh, okay, well, maybe they're in hiding. You know, you never know. And Tiffany's like, it's like she's clearly trying to be nice, but she's also, like, just bumbling through it, you know? Like, oh, cool, gay people, you know? And she also might be saying, black people, because
I was going to say, what's she even referring to?
Right, exactly. And that's another thing, a lot of, like, what Malik's going through is, like, he doesn't know. So it's like, how do you interpret information that it's like, this could either be fine or this could be bad? And how do you balance that? And she gives them a very weird flower and tells them, like, you know, when this blooms, it's stunning. But to me, it looks like a vertical version of the plant in Little Shop of Horrors. Like, it looks like an artichoke or something. Like, it's a very strange plant to give as a gift, but they're like, oh, well, thank you, you know? Meanwhile, Kayla is looking for a part-time job until school starts. So she's biking around town. She's printed out resumes and is, like, handing them out. And she sees this smoking hot hunk leaning on the hood of his red sports car, smoking a cig. And his name is
Coolest
Ty.
Thing there is. Yeah. Oh,
and
man.
Immediately she's like, okay. He's got floppy hair, like 90s hair, you know?
Yeah, 90s
and she's
hair.
Done.
Wow.
She's done. And so later Malik goes for a run. Of course, he sees like an older white lady just staring at him. There are no other black people that we see in the town.
Yeah,
so he's like, oh, hello. You know, it's like, is it just because I'm new? Like, he waves, like he's just trying to be nice. He gets home. The back door is unlocked and he finds, I'm going to say the F word, spray painted on the wall of their living room. So you see that in the trailer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So someone has gotten in, knocked over a lamp, not really done anything else, but then written a slur on the wall. So I'm like, okay, did either Tiffany do this or did she tell someone and they did this?
And they did it. Right.
And as you can imagine, this immediately makes Malik flashback to watching his teen boyfriend be beaten in the parking lot by three white guys. And they don't say this, but like, I was like, is this the boy? Is that his boyfriend's family? Like, it's like, it seems so targeted that they would just pull the one boy out.
Yeah.
And be beating him.
Yes.
You know, like, I mean, not that like, oh, of course they would beat both of them up. But there is something where it's like, it seems so deliberate that I'm like, oh, is that like his family?
Right.
I don't know. It was just incredibly sad either way, obviously.
Yes. No. Awful.
Malik immediately paints over the slur. And so when Eric gets home, he's like, oh, I didn't know you wanted to paint here. And Malik says, yeah, I figured to use a fresh coat. Allison. He does not tell Erin or Kayla about the hateful graffiti that has been written on the inside of their home.
Ugh, that's so hard because on the one hand, I do understand wanting to be like, it feels terrible to experience and see that. And like, you don't want other people to have to feel that. But it is a harbinger of more danger to come, I think, and therefore yes. important for people that live in the house to know about.
Absolutely. And I just think in terms of like being in a marriage, you know, you got to tell people about this kind of thing. You shouldn't bottle it up.
You have to tell if you know someone's been in the house who wasn't supposed to, and now you all live in the house. Like exactly. That's actually just good. That's just good house etiquette.
And so, right. Like, it's like somebody came in, maybe he left the door open, but they still came in, you know? And I also think that there is something to be said about, this to me is enough to leave. I'm like, I understand you bought a home, but this to me is the biggest red flag you could possibly have.
I'd move.
But I guess we're supposed to think like Malik is both torn. Like this trauma in his past has affected him in two ways. One is which he's in, like mm-hmm. he wants to shut down and be in denial about this kind of stuff. But mm-hmm. also then he sort of is like, am I being paranoid? Is this real? What is an indication of potential danger? Which is very reasonable.
Unfortunately,
he then, it's almost like he starts to undermine his own ability to judge what's dangerous. Because this is already bad. So Keely gets a job as a hostess at Bill and Pete's Bar and Grill. And to celebrate that night, Erin takes a CD out of her 90s dance CD jewel case and puts it in the CD player. And he forces her to dance with them in the living room, which is very cute. Aww. And she's like, all right, my dads are lame, but whatever. Unfortunately, we see Mr. Reinhardt, the older man from across the street, standing in their yard, staring through the window at them in the evening. Mm-mm. And so Malik, So Malik has to stay up late to work, and we see that he's writing the biography of one Dr. Darrelson, who is a psychologist, and it's sort of like his theories have been falling out of favor as the decades go by.
And it's almost like they're outdated and wrong.
Man, when you hear about what science was doing in the 70s, the gap, and I'm sure this is true about every part of science or whatever, but like the difference between like the 70s and the 90s, it's like it might as well be the 40s and 3000 or something.
Right.
Like there's a lot of stuff where it's like, this isn't a mental illness, someone's just gay, you know, or that kind of stuff. And unfortunately, he is a psychologist of that field where like being gay is something to potentially, this is an issue to address.
Right.
Malik looks up and he has like a cork board with like all this like different stuff about this guy. And he realizes that a piece of paper that he had put in the middle of the cork board is missing. But we don't know what it is. But we see that there's a hole in his documents. So he's like, is that why they were here, to steal something from me? So without talking to Erin, he calls and has a security system. Two technicians come and set up a security system. And he calls his former boyfriend, Liam. So the person that we saw getting beaten, he calls Liam.
Survived.
Yes. And he says to him, I have a really bad feeling, just like when we were dating. Do you remember when we were kids that summer, we stayed up at your aunt's cottage and you thought it was a good idea to tell your friend Erica about this? And I told you I had a bad feeling. So maybe that's what we're saying is like the boyfriend, Liam, told people and that led to his beating. So I think he's trying to say like, I feel like that's where we're at now.
Yes.
And I'm afraid where this is going. Liam, of all people's like, you know, I really think the world is changing and things are getting better, which is true, but it also doesn't mean that somebody isn't going to target you.
Right.
You know,
but unfortunately. There are still like hateful, awful people.
Exactly. And also Liam is white. So it's like, to me, it's like, well, Liam can't really speak to like these people, the racism in this town. He doesn't know, you know, but Liam's like, I really want to believe that things are different. So I would, you know, I don't freak out about this. And then Liam realizes, wait a minute, you didn't tell Erin about the slur, did you? And Malik's like, no, I didn't know if I should. And then Erin arrives home. And so Malik rushes off the phone.
Okay.
And Malik's like, everything's fine.
It's a lot
fine.
Of secrecy that I don't like.
Exactly. So that night, they're invited to a bonfire at Tiffany's house. And, you know, which really did make me miss growing up in a semi-rural area. Because there were just so many bonfires. And it was like cold. Mm-hmm. You could be outside. And Tiffany introduces them to her husband, Marshall, who again is like very nice, but like kind of bumbling. It's like, I'm a stay-at-home husband too. I have a IT company and I'm a one-man operation. He's talking. Meanwhile, Malik can see Mr. Reinhardt staring at him from across the fire. And so Malik's like kind of like trying to respond. And then he looks back and Mr. Reinhardt's gone. So it's like, what is this guy? He keeps staring at me. Like, just come and say whatever you're going to say. Just say it to my face.
Right. And stop standing in my yard.
Exactly. But they have a nice enough time. They go home. Of course, in the middle of the night, Malik wakes up. He hears a sound. and he has a wherewithal to bring a bat downstairs. And okay, as he goes downstairs, the alarm goes off and he sees Mr. Reinhard in a winter coat standing on his porch, ostensibly trying to get in. And then he runs off the porch.
Standing on their porch.
Yes.
So okay. Trying to get into their house.
So Malik's like, yes. So Malik's like, oh, shit. And so he chases down Mr. Reinhard, which is pretty easy because Mr. Reinhard is older. And he chases him and he's about to hit him with a bat. And Mr. Reinhardt's like, no, sorry. I didn't mean to scare you. I need to give you this. And he hands him a piece of paper and he says, don't tell anybody. And he's like,
he's like, I'm great at not telling people things.
So. Yeah, don't worry about that. And he's like, what? And before he can even say anything, the alarm system's going off and all the other neighbors, like we see Marshall come outside being like, what's going on? And then suddenly the old man is, Reinhard's like, have you seen my keys? What time is it? I get so confused. He starts to pretend that he has dementia and sort of like wanders off back to his house. But in that moment when he was talking to Malik, he was very deliberate. And he says to him about the piece of paper, please take this and don't tell anyone. And Malik's like, what the fuck is that? So he goes inside and Aaron's upset that he had the security system installed without telling him. Again, I should have told him. And it's the 90s, so it's incredibly expensive. It was like thousands of dollars. And he's like, I am not paying for this. This is the middle of nowhere. No one's going to break in. He doesn't know about the slur. Malik, you got to tell him so he could back you up on this. But
I think middle of nowhere is where you need a security system.
I mean, like, I have a lot of complicated feelings about security systems because I do feel like when they sell them, they sort of prey on this, like...
They prey on, fear.
Fear. And, you know, but then if you experience a break-in, I think it's fair if you want to get one for the peace of mind. It's just that Aaron doesn't know they had a break-in.
Right.
And, of course, Malik can't figure out how to shut the alarm off, so it's just going on and on. And Aaron's like, oh, my God, you know, like, freaking out. And Aaron storms up to bed, and Malik goes back to his office to work. And Malik takes the paper out of his pocket. And Allison, what is on the paper?
I mean, is it the missing one from his research board?
Allison, there's nothing on it. It's blank.
Oh, God.
So my question to you at this point is, what would you do?
What would you do?
We're moving. Like, we're moving.
100%.
Like, there is not a world, I'd be like, it doesn't, we have no ties to this town. Let's just go to a different one.
Yeah.
Like, there's no point, there is no point staying in this place. And I would tell my partner and child.
Yes.
Maybe not child, everything that's happened, but like, tell my partner everything that's led up to this and be like, we got to go.
Absolutely. I feel like what they're sort of going for in this is like the inherently isolating experience of being having a different experience than most people around you. So it's sort of like, he's even isolated from Aaron because of him being black. And so I feel like he's trying to he's going to force them to have a positive experience and be able to live here.
Yeah.
Even though there are all these red flags being thrown up. I think that it must be tied, they don't spell this out, but I think it must be tied to like having this trauma is that he then is like, no, I must be just freaking out.
Yeah.
You know, like, this and might be a problem that I'm going to take on personally rather than systemically something is very wrong. We should get out of here.
Right. Yeah. And I would imagine, like, not want, you know, the comment about, like, living out loud is the bravest thing you can do. Like, he's like, no, I ran before. Like, I am staying now, kind of. Like, they can't force me out of my place, you know, which I understand that, but also stay alive.
Exactly. In the morning, Aaron goes for work and Malik takes some sort of medication, which I assume is a psychiatric medication.
Great.
And because he is smarter than me, because I am a worm with a worm brain, he starts to examine the paper, like looking like, is there invisible ink? And then he takes like a pencil and tries to like, I don't know what you call that, like shade it to try to see if there's like indentations embossed. There's nothing. And so also weird. Like now Aaron is like, and he's like, you need to get the alarm company to come get this. I'm not paying for this. And like, in Malik's defense, like, Aaron doesn't know about the slur, but an elderly man did try to break in. But I guess in Aaron's mind, it's like, oh, a guy with dementia was on our porch. Like, it's not a big deal. Like, it's sad, you know?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Kayla has started hooking up with this hunk we saw earlier, Ty. And they're hanging out, like, in his room, smoking weed, playing Sega Genesis. And pretty he's sweet. Like, so you're the girl with no with two dads. And everybody, of course, in town knows about it. And she's like, yeah, you're going to like be weird about it. He's like, no, I think that's cool. You know, I don't know anyone with two dads. If you have two dads, where's your mom? And Keila said she's probably partying in Costa Rica with her new family and my inheritance. So I guess the mom bounced. So she doesn't even all see right. her mother, obviously, if she lives in Costa Rica. So they are now totally estranged from one another.
Okay. Okay.
And Aaron is, you know, parenting. Back at home that night, Malik is hard at work. He's ghostwriting, and he stops to get a glass of water. And in Mr. Reinhardt's home, the elderly man, in his living room, he sees a group of people sort of joined hands and swaying back and forth.
This is
in
the trailer.
A circle. Overhead light on, no curtains. Yeah. Like, clearly arms you want up. Me to look in here.
Yeah.
And he sees Marshall, Tiffany's husband, mm-hmm. and a young man, well, we don't know who he is yet. Mm-hmm. And Malik's like, I'm going to take a photo of this. Malik goes to take a Polaroid, and the flash alerts them, and Marshall turns and notices, and then they shut the curtains. So Malik yes. gets the photo of this weird, you know, sort of mm-hmm. ritual, but he does not know it's important. However, unfortunately, the next day, Mr. Reinhardt's body is carried out of his house and put into an ambulance.
Oh, no.
So pretty much almost as soon as he gives this piece of paper to Malik, Mr. Reinhardt is dead. And we see that the younger man we saw is Mr. Reinhardt's grandson, who's like in his 20s, Matthew. Mm-hmm. And Matthew is sobbing, and he's really distraught, and I guess he lived there with his grandfather. And Tiffany and Marshall come over to talk to Aaron and Malik, because like everyone in on the street's like, oh, you know, did you see this happen, you know? And I guess that the grandson had called him over and that saying his grandfather died the night before, and some of the neighbors had gone over to pay their final respects, and it turned into a bit of a celebration. Okay. And Marshall is saying this to Malik, like, I know what you saw was weird, but that's our thing. Like, that was just a weird thing that we do, but it wasn't anything malevolent. It's just a weird thing. Malik, of course, is like, I don't believe this.
It's like, no.
So for reasons I cannot understand, Malik still doesn't tell Aaron. But he is freaking out enough about the piece of paper and the fact that this guy's now dead that yes. he goes into Mr. Reinhardt's house when the grandson goes with the body in the ambulance. So he's looking for, like, why would he give me this paper? What was he trying to tell me? And he's kind of snooping around, and he sees a photo of Mr. Reinhardt and what looks like his wife and then two younger women. And you don't know, it's like, was that two daughters? Was it, you right. know, grand? We don't know. And where are these yeah. women? You know, if right. these are, if these right. women are part,
if they're part of his family. Life, like, were they yeah. not at the ceremony or whatever?
So just then, of course, the grandson, Matthew, comes home and Malik drops the photo. And he's able to get out of the house before the grandson sees him. But the grandson finds the broken photo and he looks out and he sort of glares at Malik in Aaron's house. So he knows
that
Malik
was
in there.
Okay, not great.
Unfortunately.
Again, this is when it'd be great to have told anyone anything about any of this.
Absolutely, 100%, absolutely.
Now Malik, like, it looks bad for you.
The movie that I would compare this to is Rosemary's Baby. The whole time, you're okay. like, yes. Malik, what are you doing? But there is something in his character that he cannot reach out to people. And yes. I guess the reason I found this, like, to be satisfying is, like, I bought it. I think it's, like, he's spiraling with, oh, my God, that's probably the meaning of the title.
Spiral.
He starts to spiral because he feels like he can't tell anyone. He has to resolve this himself in a way that in Rosemary's Baby, you're like, why don't you call your friends to come over or, like, be like, yeah. fuck you, I'm leaving. It's because there is something within her character where she's like, no, I can't believe anything bad about my husband. I cannot believe anything bad would happen. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that is going to lead to a lot more problems, as it also does for Malik.
Absolutely.
Now, yes, you'd like to think you'd tell your partner, but hey, you never know. Hope to never find out being in this situation. Meanwhile, Ty picks up Keila and they, like, ditch her job or whatever. And they have a fun teen date of leaning on a car, smoking near a bridge. And Kayla's like, I'm like dating this guy. Like, I think we're still boyfriend, girlfriend, but like, I don't know. And Ty's like, well, you should probably figure that out. Like, if we're going to hang out. And just then they see someone standing on the far end of the bridge. And it is someone without a coat. It's freezing. And who has like a black hood or mask over his head. And they both notice. And they're like, do you see that? And then the man starts walking towards them.
No, that's so scary.
And luckily they have Ty's car. So they bail and they drive away. But they, it's just like this moment of like, who's that? They don't tell anyone. Like, she doesn't tell her dads about this.
People
you know?
Need to start talking. Like, this is, I mean, and this movie could only exist in 1995 and not in 2021 because all of these things would have been heavily documented on social media.
Taking a photo, put it on Twitter, put it on Instagram.
I mean, 100%. If anything, I'm leaving a paper trail for when something eventually happens to me.
Yeah, if you see a guy like that at a bridge, you're going to take a photo and you're going to tell people.
You're going to take a picture and be like, what the fuck? And then it shows up on like whatever the... you know, Alberta version of like, what is Alberta? Like that, what is New York? And it's just like freaks around town who are like being weirdos and
right.
people would know what's going on.
It would probably draw tourists, honestly. Probably get those tourism numbers up. So that night, Aaron and Malik are going over to Tiffany and Marshall's house for like a little wine and cheese get together. And Malik doesn't want to go. It's like, these people creep me out. Like, I just feel like something really, like, I feel bad. I don't want to hang out with them. And here it's like, oh my God, you always do this. I want to hang out with normal people. And you are just like already hating on them. And Lee's like, so what do you mean by normal? And you mean straight, you know? And he says, what's an Uncle Tom but for gay people? Aaron doesn't like that. And because, you know, Malik's like, okay, I stepped over a line. He will go over to Tiffany and Marshall's house. And Tiffany and Marshall, you know, they're doing their best. It is the mid-90s. And Tiffany's like, you know, love is all that matters. It doesn't matter if you're a single parent or a married couple or whatever you guys are. You know, love is the most important thing. And it's like, all right.
Trying.
So close, you know. And Malik's like, well, I think that's a nice thought, but most people don't think of it that way. And Marshall's like, well, then they're assholes, you know. And during this conversation, Aaron reveals that his ex-wife kind of wilded out during their divorce and was basically trying to argue that being gay meant he should not be able to have custody of his daughter. And he said that his relationship was with Malik was high risk and illegitimate. And and they're like, you know what high risk means, you know. And Marshall's like, I think that's disgusting. You know, I think it's a shame that people's perceptions can sort of warp their understanding. Meanwhile, he's staring at Malik like, you know that weird ritual you saw? That's what I'm talking about, too. I'm talking about your beautiful gay marriage and also our weird night funeral dancing or whatever.
Yes.
And Malik's like, uh-huh. Like, these are things are not the same. Just then, Kayla's new boyfriend, Ty, comes home, and we realize that Ty is Tiffany and Marshall's son.
Okay.
He does not say, oh, I was out with your daughter, Kayla, and he does not tell him about the guy in the mask either. He's just like, I'm going to post up. On his way to the bathroom, Malik finds a study, and he sort of sees this, like, all these creepy old photos. Marshall was, like, doing all this, like, lineage investigation. And he finds a photo dating from 1792 that's like, and Marshall's like, oh, that's my great-great-great-grandfather, whatever. It looks exactly like Ty. Like, it basically is a photo of Ty.
Whoa.
And Malik also sees a leather-bound book.
Wait, but it's not a photo. 1792.
Sorry, a painting. So it's like a, a portrait of
a portrait
this
that looks just
ancestor.
Like.
It looks just like Ty. You're right. When did, right
I was about to be like, when was photograph?
Was
yeah, I don't know.
When was photograph? We don't know. Not
we
for
don't
us
know.
To know.
We don't know.
And so he also sees a bound book with a spiral on the spine. Mm-hmm. And B doesn't get a chance to look at it before Marshall kind of guides him back to the living room. That night, Malik is still up doing research, and we hear this Dr. Dumbass on the recording talking about, oh, you know, all these confused young men and women, they're suffering, and I'm helping them. So it's like, not only is Malik dealing with this shit in his real life, he has to then go and listen for hours of this deranged person talking.
That's terrible.
Yeah. So clearly their move and this project is bringing up a lot for them. And in the morning, Kayla is working out in the living room and getting ready to go to work. And she sees Ty out the back window and he's on a walk with another girl. And they almost kiss and he gives her his jacket. And so Kayla's like, this dumb bitch.
It's like, girl, you got a boyfriend, so.
Yeah, that's true. So Malik's also working from home, and he hears a knock on the front door, and he opens it, and it's the grandson of Mr. Reinhardt, Matthew. And he's like, can I talk to you about my grandfather? Malik invites him in, and Matthew's like, I'm sorry, my grandfather was acting really strange. You know, he had dementia, and I just want to let you know, I know that he went into your backyard and I'm sorry if he scared you. And Malik's like, hey, you know, it's okay, you know. And then Matthew says, so did he give you anything? And Malik's like, nope. Why would you ask that? And then suddenly Matthew's crying and he's like, oh my gosh, like they're saying that my grandfather committed suicide. He took all his medications at once and he's sobbing. And so Malik sort of like, you know, pats him to like comfort him. And sure. all of a sudden, Matthew's like running his hands up Malik's back and like putting his like mouth into his neck and sort of makes a move on him. Just then, of course, Aaron walks in. It's like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know we had company. I'm coming home for lunch. Yeah. And so Malik's like, it's not a big deal. And as they're getting ready for bed, Malik finds like a huge bruise on his chest, but he has no memory of how it got there. And he's like, did this happen when when Matthew touched me? Like, I don't know why. Like, why would I have this bruise? When this would have,
right.
Yeah. And so, but Aaron's like, okay, so it seems like you're into this guy. Like, I mean, it's been a while since we had a third, but is this something that you're interested in? And Malik's like, man, I'm in the middle of a horror movie. Like, I am not interested in him. Like, I don't know what that was.
I'm not interested in anything sexual.
Right, yeah, like, you know, but Aaron's like, he doesn't know about all this stuff. So Aaron's just like, oh, I saw you like almost making out with a guy. So maybe that's what is on the table.
Right.
You know, but Malik's like, no, I just want you. And just when they're about to get busy, they hear Kayla screaming bloody murder in the house. And they run over to her room and her face is drenched in blood. But they can't figure out where it's from. Like, it's just, like, covered in blood. She's screaming. They flip on the light, and they realize that there is blood coming through the ceiling. Like, it is soaked completely through the ceiling. So Malik, the greatest stepdad of all time, goes up to the attic to check
I'd be like,
there.
I don't even want to know. We're going to call
none of my business.
Somebody else
my only
to
business
find
is,
out.
Yeah, my only business is
getting
who
out of
can
house.
Pick us up and get us the fuck out of here.
Yes.
He goes up there, and instead what he finds is a pile of murdered raccoons, freshly dead, because they're clearly bleeding enough to bleed through the ceiling.
To be currently bleeding, yeah.
It's not just like it's one, you know. And so if I'm seeing that, I am booking a motel two towns over, I'm calling the cops, I'm getting everyone out of the house, and we're just driving.
Because
we're
like
not staying
the
here.
Best case scenario is they all were killed and they somehow all crawled there like that or like I mean
right I'm at least calling like, an exterminator
yeah like it's like all right something weird and terrible is going on here and also like once that's been in the house like you never get that out of the house
exactly how do you get raccoon blood out of the ceiling you know like
who could know
it's just there so you know Malik throws them away in the garbage and then he says to Aaron do you think someone put them there and Aaron signs his death certificate by saying What are you talking about, Aaron? Mm. You dumb sack of trash.
Aaron.
There are multiple murdered raccoons. These were not like, and Aaron even says, like, well, maybe they ate poison and they exploded. Like, what are you talking about?
In one place?
All at the same time?
Right.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm like, you know, I'd be like, we have to take her to the hospital. What if those raccoons had rabies? Like, Kayla got the blood in her eyes and her mouth, you know?
Yes.
Oh, God. Unfortunately, Malik still has to work on this goddamn horrible book or whatever. And so we finally hear a video of this terrible doctor explaining how he founded the Ernie Darrelson Clinic, named after his father, dedicated to offering a path back to righteousness. And Malik Googles it, and we find out about gay conversion therapy, which we kind of already knew that's what they were going for, but it rattles us nonetheless, knowing that this is still something that people claim is legitimate.
Yes.
As opposed to being just a horrible ordeal to put people through.
Yes.
So at dinner the next day, Kayla says she cannot find her Polaroid cartridges, like her blanks. Mm-hmm. But Malik is just in this absolute fog. He can't even really respond to Aaron or Kayla. And he keeps having dreams about the old man and the slip of the paper. And unfortunately, he dreams so heavily he doesn't wake up because if he had wake up, he would see there's a crowd of hooded cultists standing on the lawn staring at the house. Just a crowd of them.
At night?
At night. Oh, you gotta do it. If you're gonna be in a cult, you gotta be staring. If we learn anything from Hereditary, you gotta be in the woods staring at a house at night.
You gotta do night staring.
In the shower the next day, Malik and Aaron are showering together, and Malik tells Aaron he can't finish the book because his not because this is a psychologist who puts people through conversion therapy that's horrible and it's like triggering all this stuff for him, but because his hard drive died and he lost everything. So I think I took that to mean that his hard drive's fine, but
and he just was like, I'm not fucking writing this awful piece of shit. Yeah.
But yeah, because like, which I get, like, listen, as a freelancer, if I were to tell Dave, like, I just can't do this book, I can't get all this money, I think he'd understand, but there would be something where it's like, well, it would be nice if you had an income this month. So I think it's like, oh, my computer's broken. It's not my problem. It's not my fault.
Yes.
Which I completely get that. Suddenly, Kayla knocks on the door and Malik comes too. And he realizes that Aaron's not there. He's in the shower alone. And he's been in the shower for almost an hour.
That's long.
So he's like losing time, you know. And we saw him take psychiatric medication. But as far as we know, he is continuing to take it. So now I think he's starting to be like, wait a minute. Is this real? Or am I having some sort of like trauma-related
break
from reality? But luckily, the shower has given him an idea. And the idea is water. So he runs over to the slip of paper Mr. Reinhardt gave him and he puts water on it. And what does he find on the paper?
I mean, I gotta believe it's a spiral.
It's a series of numbers to the library. To the public library. So he runs over to do some good old-fashioned horror research. God. And because, again, Malik is, I would have been like, I don't know, what to boo, boo. I wouldn't be able to come up with anything. He uses the numbers as dates. And he's able to figure out that every 10 years in this town, there is a double murder. And the most recent one was in 85. And he's able to find this issue of a local newspaper. And it's a murder-suicide. And in the accompanying photo, we see it's a lesbian couple. They are the two women that we saw in Reinhardt's photo. So it turns out one of them is his daughter, and they died in what the police said was a murder-suicide. Of course, Malik's like, this was not a murder-suicide at all.
Definitely not a murder-suicide.
Back home, Malik tells Aaron, finally, he starts to spill the beans. He still doesn't tell him about the graffiti, which is a very dubious decision, but he's like, look, these are dates. Every 10 years, a couple is murdered, and the last couple was this lesbian couple. And, you know, why wouldn't Tiffany and Marshall mention that to us? Like, a murder happened of a gay couple. Like, why would you not say something to us? And Aaron says,
they told me all of this. Marshall and Tiffany are good people, Mal. And you know what? I happen to like this town.
Oh, Jesus Christ, Aaron.
You need to stop thinking that everyone's trying to get you all the time.
What happened to you was tragic, I know.
But okay, so maybe Aaron was like, I didn't want to tell Malik about it because I know Malik had been through this horrible trauma and it's unrelated. It was a murder-suicide. It's not something that he needed to know. And if he did, he would maybe start to spiral in the way that he's spiraling now.
I could see that.
You know, and I would say, like, what were Tiffany and Marshall supposed to bring it up? Like, why did she's like, a gay couple. We knew a gay couple that absolutely murdered each other like 10 years ago. You know, like, it wouldn't have been the
anyway,
time.
Anyway, welcome. Yeah. Not great.
You guys like a Shiraz? Yeah. unfortunately, Aaron, in the grand tradition of horror movie spouses, does not believe Malik.
Of course.
He's like, I like this town. You think everyone's out to get you all the time. And finally, he says, he's like, I know what happened to you, that hate crime. And you and your teen boyfriend, I know that was horrible and it really affected you. And he basically attributes all of it to like the trauma in Malik's past. But as we know from horror movies, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean that no one is out to get you. You know? So I think it's both.
Right. Both things can be true.
Yeah. And Aaron says, I promise that will never happen. Nothing like that will happen to you ever again. And Malik says, you cannot make this kind of promise. And boy, can't he.
No, you cannot.
So in the garage, Malik calls Liam, and even Liam is like, you need to calm down. You're talking really fast. Like, I'm concerned that, like, this is maybe, you know, you're manic or you're having some sort of mental health crisis, you know. But I'm like, okay, but he found the numbers. But then I'm like, I guess maybe they could be like, oh, did you write this down yourself? You know, like.
Right.
Oh, a man gave me an invisible ink piece of paper. Yeah, it starts to sound a little bit, you know.
It does start to sound, and like knowing that he's on like psychiatric drugs is always the kind of thing that will make people doubt like what your story is, because suddenly that makes you like unreliable, even though it shouldn't.
Right, exactly.
But that does happen.
Emily, Liam says, do you think the reason you keep calling me is like you're looking for permission to like move on from what happened to us? Like, is this seems like it is connected. Emily's like, it's completely unconnected. This is a completely different situation and we are in grave danger, you know? And Liam's like, okay, well, you should sleep and I'll talk to you tomorrow. And he hangs up. Just then, Malik sees something on the ceiling and when he lowers the garage door, what does he see, Allison? A giant spiral drawn on the garage ceiling. The next day, Malik goes running, which I would not do. I would have already packed up and been like, I'm leaving. I'm taking Kayla and I'm leaving. Like, you can do whatever you want to do.
Yes.
The couple was not killed in their house. It was a separate house that he has seen on his runs. Okay. And so he decides, I'm going to visit this house, which is abandoned, and try to see if I can find any clues about what happened to this couple and what I should do.
The clues, you have all the clues.
You have plenty. I showed you the clues, officer. I gave you all the clues. So he goes down there, goes into this house, and he finds like a crawl space that's full of VHS tapes. But before he can get them, he hears someone downstairs. Allison, he goes downstairs and he sees a full-on bloody ghost of
what?
Either, I don't know if it was Hannah or Sarah, one of the lesbian couple is standing there dead and hands him the VHS tapes that he didn't pick up. And then when he comes to, he's just standing there holding the VHS tapes. So ostensibly, he's having either it's a real ghost or he's having hallucinations. And so he takes the VHS tapes because listen, if a ghost hands you some tapes, well, then it's hard because then of the ring. You know, you just don't.
Right.
Can you trust
I know.
A ghost?
It's like, so this exists. We're in a timeline before The Ring was a movie. So he doesn't know that.
Exactly. There's no way for him to know. And he won't know for 5 more years. And so by the time he comes home, it's dawn. And he rushes in and he finds that the hard drive has been pulled out of his desktop computer. And he's like, Aaron, what happened? Did you do this? Like, who took this? And he finds Aaron's outside and he's sort of like moping. And he's like, Aaron, what the fuck? Who took my computer? And Aaron says, I found the photos of you and Matthew. If you had wanted to have sex with them, like, just tell me. Like, you didn't have to cheat on me. Emily's like, I never hooked up with Matthew. And we see the photos. And I'm sorry. Like, they're like BDSM photos. Uh-huh. In my mind, you could tell that Malik is unconscious. And then we realize, oh, that's why he has bruises on him.
Right.
They're from this non-consensual BDSM session that Matthew got him into. We don't know when, because like we know that.
Yeah, I was going to say, when did this happen?
I guess we're to think like Malik starts to realize he's losing time, so maybe he's been losing time this whole time.
Okay.
But we don't know. We never see a situation where like he wakes up somewhere, like we don't know.
Yeah.
But something has happened. And so he's trying to tell Aaron like that's not me. I don't remember. I would be like, I seem to be unconscious. This guy raped me essentially.
Right. Do you see me moving or like even able to move in these photos?
And Aaron says like, I don't want to see you here when I get back from work. And Malik says, I do not have anywhere to go. Like, you're just going to kick me out. Where am I going to go? And Aaron says, you'll figure it out. And I'm like, get the fuck out of there. Don't stop driving.
Unfortunately, just go.
Malik is a good person and he loves Aaron and Kayla. Obviously, he doesn't want Kayla to be hurt either. So he's like, oh, God damn it. And he goes inside and he gets all his research and he puts it on that's a CD and he hides it in the 90s hits jewel case.
Where no one will ever find it.
I know. And so it's the phone rings and it's the police. And apparently Kayla got into a fight with this girl, Jessica. She's the one that we saw Ty taking the walk with. And Kayla's like, Jessica's a bitch, like, blah, blah, blah. And Malik's like, I do not have the time or the bandwidth to deal with this. We are in the middle of a horror movie. I have to figure this out and fucking get, like, make sure we don't all get killed. And he tells, you know, and Kayla says, well, the reason that it wasn't about her dating Ty, it's that Jessica told Ty that Kayla was going to give him AIDS because she has two dads. And in a very sad moment, Malik's like, it's not safe for you to stand out. It is not, do not speak out, do not speak up. It is not safe. I was wrong to tell you that. And this, do not hang out with this Tyler kid. I had better not find out you're hanging out. Something is wrong with that family. And Kayla's like, oh my God, okay, sure. Correct. Like, I don't even like them that much anyways. Cut to Kayla and Tyler making out in a room that very night. And she tells him,
teenage girls.
I know. And she doesn't know. Again, she doesn't know about the slur. Yeah. She doesn't know all this stuff. She doesn't have all the information.
She doesn't know all this other stuff is going on. Though she did see that freaky guy in a hood. And I would be like, you know what? There's a lot going on. Maybe time to listen to my dads.
I completely agree. And she tells Tyler, you know, like, I've never had sex before. And he says, we should wait and make it special. And Kayla's kind of like, all right, I guess. I'm ready now, but sure, you know.
Right.
So at this point, Aaron has kicked Malik out of the house. He's literally having a private meltdown in his car. He's listening to, like, talk radio, and it's Rush Limbaugh or some other horse's ass talking about, like, the Clintons and radical feminism and homosexual rights and, like, all this stuff, all this 90s horse shit, you know, venomous bullshit.
Yeah.
And Aaron looks out the window, and Malik's still parked in the driveway like he hasn't left yet, and they lock eyes, and Aaron just closes the curtains. Hope you like dying, Aaron, you absolute idiot.
That is The dumbest choice.
And obviously Malik keeps experiencing, like, suddenly he's back, he's in the car, and then suddenly he's in the car watching his boyfriend be beaten. You know, like, he mm-hmm. keeps being coming back to his trauma, and he's literally sleeping in his car, and it's so cold that he does the thing he's, like, not dying to do, which is he goes over to Tiffany and Marshall's house, and he's like, can I stay here for a little bit? And he has a drink. They don't know anyone else. So he tells Marshall about his and Aaron's fight, and he's like, I didn't hook up with Matthew. I don't know what happened, you know, whatever. And yeah. Marshall's like, oh, yeah, like, actually, Aaron brought over your hard drive. Your hard drive wasn't stolen. He gave it to me. And I just want you to know, I saw that folder you have, and, you know, I just think, you know, you should get some help because I saw what was on that folder, and I just don't think you want that kind of thing getting out. Don't worry. I won't tell anyone. So I don't know whether he was referring to, like, BDSM or if we're saying, like, there's, like, child abuse or something. Whatever the worst thing. But the implication is, I found a folder on your computer. Did I put it there? Of course I did. You won't be able to prove that. So I just think you should know that I now have this leverage over you. And Malik's like, great, good, all right, excited about that. Things couldn't have been worse, but now I see that they have gotten worse. And also now that Marshall has his hard drive, he's seen all the research that Malik has done. He knows that Malik is on to whatever's going on in this town.
Yes.
So yes. Marshall now has information, you know, that maybe there's plausible deniability, but Malik's a smart person. And unfortunately, he has been recording all of this onto his computer. And, you know, Marshall kind of corners Malik and he says, and it's an exciting time, you know. So much is changing, and yet so much stays the same. And Malik's like, okay, bye, I gotta go. And finally, he goes to stay at a seedy motel.
Yes, and that is a way safer place to be than any of these maniacs' homes.
And so we see that he has stolen the spiral book from Marshall's bookshelf. Because he's like, I saw the spiral, I see it on a book, I'm taking it. And he's got that, and he dumps it out.
That was smart.
He dumps it along with his medication and all the VHS tapes. And luckily, this motel has a VCR player. He unfortunately also has a gun that apparently he had the whole time, but he took with him. And he tries to call Liam, but the number is disconnected. And he keeps calling them, and he's sort of like, it seems like things are devolving in his hotel room. And at a certain point, Malik sees through the curtain of the hotel what looks like a giant horned figure standing right outside his room that starts talking to him in this, like, gravelly, low voice.
Yeah.
And he lifts his gun and he's about to shoot through the window when suddenly he comes to and it's just the shadow of a lady walking to her room. So he almost just shot this woman.
This woman. This random woman.
He also turns around suddenly and sees the bloody ghost of one of the lesbian moms in the bathroom just screaming. And then she disappears.
Oh, great.
So he starts watching all of the VHS tapes and he realized what he has done documenting all this stuff is what Hannah and Sarah, or potentially just one of them, the lesbian couple, they were also doing. Okay. They also had a slur spray painted on the side of their house. They also had people being in their yard and trying to break in. Yes. So they're recording
this. So it's all lining up.
Exactly. And he realized, every 10 years, they just, you know, whether, and we'll get into whether it's just because they're gay, a family is chosen. And then some people are chosen for this purpose. There's some sort of ritual. All these things happen in this exact same order. And we are now this couple. And he's reading the spiral-bound book. It is, of course, like a satanic worshiping cult.
Yes, of course.
They have made a deal with the devil.
What else could it be?
Exactly. It's all part of it. That, like, weird plant, when it blooms, that's when it's going to happen. And it all has to do with, like, living forever and making sacrifices to God. And there's, like, a big horned creature. And Malik realizes that he goes to take his medication and somebody has switched it. So ostensibly, either he hasn't been taking his medication or someone has been giving him something to hallucinate and lose time. So they've been manipulating him down to that point.
Yes.
So this is, he's been manipulated completely, but now he also has this information. And he calls Aaron, and Aaron, the dumbest man, the dumbest husband in a horror movie, says Peter Sarsgaard's character in Orphan, says, you're talking crazy. Bitch, it doesn't matter. Get out of the house.
Matter. Like, you could be mad worst at him. Case scenario, you go stay in a hotel for two nights and it was nothing. And you rack up some Marriott points and you keep it moving. Like, there's no reason to, like, deny that things are, like, especially when it feels like somebody's at the end of their rope, which Malik is.
Exactly. And it's like, worst comes to, like, even if this isn't true, if there isn't a cult, you know, like, your husband is having some sort of complete dissociation from reality. You need to get in there and get him help, you know? And that's, yes. It's hard to do in, I don't know, again, we don't know what Canada's like, but it's hard to do in America. It's like, we don't want to call the cops and like, go pick him up, take him to a hospital, get him treatment. And then also it means you will be out of the house. So a win-win for everybody, you know?
Yes, truly. The best plan.
And so finally, in the pages of the Spiral Bound book, Malik finds the photo of him and Aaron in drag from the photo album, and their eyes have been crossed out. Mm. And unfortunately, Aaron tells him on the phone, you need help. I don't call here anymore. And he keeps trying to call Liam, and the number's been disconnected. However, in the tapes, we realize it's not simply that they're a gay couple. It's that they are a gay couple with a teenage daughter who is ostensibly a virgin. And he's watching the tapes, and he sees that their teenage daughter is dating Ty, and Ty does not look a day younger. He's the exact same age. Allison, I ask you now, who will survive to the end of the film?
Who will survive?
Oh, well, I think Aaron is a goner. I think Malik will live. Mm-hmm. I hope that the daughter, whose name I'm now blanking on,
Kayla
lives, and that the family, Tina, not Maria Bello and her husband and Ty, die.
Great. Great guesses all along.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
So Malik hits the road. He's driving back furiously. Right. You know, he tried to call. Aaron wasn't having it. And as he's driving, he sees a naked man with a black hood over his head just standing on the side of the road.
Perfect.
He's screaming, terrified. And he's also, like, hallucinating. Like, he's having a lot of, like, okay, what is real, what is not real? And he bursts into the house, and they're having a party. All the neighbors are there.
Of course they are.
Tiffany's like, oh my God, I'm so glad you're here. This is all for Kayla. This is her day. And he's like, what's all for Kayla? Where's Aaron?
Oh, no.
And he runs over to Aaron. And Aaron's like, where have you been? And Lee's like, you kicked me out. And Aaron's like, yeah, that was a week ago. Like, I thought we were just fighting. Like, I thought you were gonna come back.
Oh.
So Malik's like, oh, that was a week ago, because in my mind it was last night.
Right.
So I don't, you know, so he's lost a full week. And so he starts screaming. He's like, these people, you know, like, you know, he's losing his mind in front of all of the neighbors, which makes sense. You know, his, you know, we saw his motel room sort of devolving. So we know that there had been more time.
Yes.
Marshall walks in, and Malik pulls out his gun and points it at Marshall. And he said, I'm here to protect Kayla. And Marshall says, from who? And Malik says, from you. And he shoots Marshall in the chest.
Whoa.
And everyone rushes in, and Tiffany drops her cake, and Aaron, and Malik looks down at the cake, and it was a Sweet 16 cake with a very cute little caricature of Malik and Aaron and Kayla. Aww. So there is a moment where Malik's like, did I kill this guy for no reason? Did I make all this stuff up? And everyone's, of course, freaking out, running all the neighbors are running out of the house. He has spiraled out of control. The next thing we see is Malik being put into a jail cell, and he's trying to piece together what's happening, and Aaron tells him, like, okay, we're going to sell the house, and we're moving away, and our relationship is over. And Malik is like, thank God, because even if I have to go to jail for the rest of life, at least you two will survive, and I will have achieved my mission. Move. And he's like,
I'm protecting you. Yeah.
And Aaron's like, what are you not getting? Like, you, and it's like, well, okay, if this is a real version of this, Malik has lost touch with reality. So you can't talk, be like, why are you acting like this? Something is wrong.
You can't ask reasonable questions. We've passed that point.
Yes. And is there something where it's like, okay, great, a gay black man had to sacrifice his freedom because his dumb white husband wouldn't listen to 2 seconds? That sucks.
Yeah, that sucks.
But at least he knows his family will survive. Or will he, Allison? And Malik says, you need to get out of town as soon as possible. I'm begging you to leave tonight, And Aaron's like, we're leaving, but it's not the town we're leaving. It's you. And it's like, okay, fine. I don't care. Just take Haley and get the fuck out of here. And Malik says, the only person who knows all the details is Liam. So you call him and he'll tell you. And Aaron's like, who's Liam? And he goes, my first boyfriend. And it isn't said until later, but this is a moment where you realize Liam died.
Yeah.
Liam was murdered.
Yeah.
So all these times he was calling Liam.
He hasn't even really been telling anyone anything.
Yes. And so sort of maybe the reason he couldn't tell Aaron this is he couldn't acknowledge to himself. He was already in such deep denial about this horrible thing that happened. He just couldn't be honest, or he couldn't, not be honest, but he couldn't open up because it would also unravel all of this stuff that's connected to this early trauma.
Right.
Malik does not realize this, but in talking, Aaron realizes that he is murdered. So back at home, Aaron says goodnight to Kayla and he reassures her, I'm sorry this happened. We're going to make this through, whatever. Unfortunately, they don't notice that the weird flower has bloomed on their dining room table. And so Aaron goes to Malik's computer. And I think he's just sort of looking for clues about his mental state. Yeah, what happened? And he finds a VHS tape. And it says Sammy's dance recital. And he puts it in. And he sees the lesbian couple in 1985, and they're with Ty, who again does not look a day older, as well as Marshall and Tiffany, who look exactly the same. And Marshall and Tiffany on the video are like, oh my God, somebody broke in. That's so terrible. They're doing the exact same routine.
Right.
And finally, Aaron is like, oh shit. Oh, unfortunately, shit. At this point, which you also see in the trailer, literally he's on the computer and behind him in the porch lights, you see dozens of cult members from this town lined up for the festivities. Mm-hmm. He runs upstairs to try to get to Kayla, but by the time he gets up there, the cult has gotten into the house. Oh, he bursts open the door, and Ty has already ripped open Kayla's chest cavity and is eating her heart and is consuming her body. Aaron screams, and Tiffany walks in behind him and says, isn't it beautiful? So that's all going on. Back at the jail, somebody shows up to talk to Malik. Unfortunately, it's Marshall, who he did not kill. And
these people feel, obviously immortal. So.
Exactly. And so Malik says, what are you? And Marshall says, well, I'm somebody who's been around for a really long time. And essentially he's just like, I just want you guys to know it wasn't because you're gay. It's just that we could leverage society's fears about you and get away with your murder. You see what I'm saying? So when we killed that family, it wasn't because they're lesbians. It's just that people don't care about lesbians, so it was easier for us to get away with their murders. Do you see what I'm saying? Wow. And it wasn't even about the couple. It was about having a virgin teenage daughter who they have to eat every 10 years in order to, of course, gain more immortality as every good cult wants to pursue.
As you must.
Yeah. And so Marshall says, what's going to happen is they're going to think you broke out of jail, you went back and you killed Aaron and Kayla, and you will then kill yourself, and you will be blamed for it.
People won't care, Malik. They've already got their minds made up. They're afraid of you. And when the tides change, there will be someone else to be afraid of. There always is. There always will be.
And he basically leaves Malik. What's Malik supposed to say to that? And Malik's left there in this. Yeah. Unfortunately, Allison, we pick up in November 2005. And a new family is moving into that house. And it is a heterosexual couple, but they are Sikh. And, of course, they have a teenage daughter.
Yes.
And she immediately sees Ty and is like,
on Islamophobia. Got it.
Exactly. And they're like, oh, who's that hunky guy smoking a cigarette across the street? Of course, it's Ty. And we hear in, voiceover that finally we learned that Malik has recorded everything and that he hid the CD. So the CD is hidden in the house. And we hear him talking through his his plan and like what he thinks is going to happen. And he says, I'm recording this.
This is the recording that we're hearing.
Yeah. So it's like, I'm making this for you. So if you find it, you will have a chance to break the cycle. And luckily, the cult did a piss poor job of painting over that raccoon blood, because the teenage daughter looks up and is like, oh, the ceiling is discolored. So she goes up in the attic and he has hidden the CD in the attic and she finds it. And you're like, okay, great. This will break the cycle. Unless her parents are like Aaron and they're like, oh my God, bitch, just because you found a CD in the house doesn't mean it's real.
Right.
So in the end, hopefully she will be able to, unfortunately, Malika's entire family has been murdered. Yes. But hopefully this new family will survive. And I just want to say, like, there's something, I can't remember which serial killer, it was Gary Ridgway, I don't know, there was some serial killer where basically he once caught admitted, yeah, I was specifically targeting sex workers because I knew the police didn't care. So I think they're using,
yes, there is something. Yes, I do remember reading that from someone.
So there is something true about the idea, like, mm-hmm. oh, we're just, it's not about you, it's just that no one will care about you and they're afraid of
that's
you.
That's real.
And so they will not be concerned with your death. And I thought that's why this, I like this movie, because there is something so chilling about that idea.
I think that's very real and scary.
So hopefully this family will be able to play the CD. Luckily, it's not so late that they will all
have
CD
you could still have a CD player in 2005. So
at least in your car.
I mean,
and
somewhere.
That is the end of Spiral. So Allison, what are some fatal mistakes you think our characters made?
Fatal mistakes.
I mean, again, the first time that someone has broken into your house or spray painted a slur on the wall of your living room, you tell your partner about that. You don't cover it up and stay quiet. Like,
right.
Communicating constantly would be, and also just not up and leaving the second things start to feel weird. Like, I think if we know anything from all these movies, it's like, trust your gut. If this feels wrong, it probably is wrong. And again, the worst case scenario is you've left and it was nothing, but like that seems like a better outcome.
Yeah. On the other hand, you know, I've never owned a home. I don't know how easy it is to sell. But you know, a place like that, you could turn that around and sell that. Maybe you'll take a loss, but your family will be alive. I mean, that's mainly that's the issue. Because like once you bring in the idea of like an immortality cult, well, yeah, you can't stop that. They made a deal with the devil, but you can take yourself out of the ritual before it is completed in the hopes that, you know, or I do think you could at least call the cops, tell the librarian, you know, tell people in the town, you know, but I guess maybe if they're all in on it, it wouldn't matter. And that is the implication. It's not just
it's
a bunch of people. Yeah.
Right. It seems like the entire neighborhood was in on it and there were no safe people to talk to.
Yeah. So, yeah, you got to be honest with your spouse. Tell people up front.
Yeah. Maybe don't live in small towns.
I mean, listen, as someone from a small town, I think that's great advice.
Yeah.
But that takes us now to the spooky scale. Allison, where would you place Spiral from 2019 on the spooky scale?
A spooky scale.
I mean, I think, like, the mix of, like, actual horror, like of like, you know, movie horror with the terror of actual societal horror and that exists in this makes it scarier. Like, I think it's an 8 for me.
An 8.
Like, because I think that what it's preying on is a very real fear, which is so much harder to shake than like just a cult, but like a cult that capitalizes on ostracization that we do for anybody that doesn't fit what we consider to be normal, like capital N, even that, like, so I think that's very scary because that's very real.
I'm gonna give it a 6 because I feel like it was scarier than I thought it was gonna be. And I do feel like there's something, I do like a Rosemary's Baby type of horror where it's like, we know they have to get out of there, but it's so much harder for them to realize it because, again, they don't know they're in a horror movie. And the sort of creeping dread, the constantly returning to this horrible traumatic event from his youth, it made you, I don't know, I also think like the acting was good. I thought everyone was super creepy and it was well done. Yeah, this is my taste in horror movie, I feel like. Not a lot of laughs, but, you know, and I think it's scarier because it has such a downbeat ending. I feel like if Malik had been the hero and gotten them out of there, that's much less scary. But the fact they're like, they done. This is another family that's not going
to
survive.
A cycle that continues is never a fun way to end a movie. Because you're just like, well, I guess that's going to keep going until someone else figures it out, but it wasn't them.
Yeah. All right. Well, guys, thank you so much for listening.
Yes.
As always, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Ruined Podcast, and you could email us at ruined@theradiopoint.com.
Nailed it. And, you know, you got. I feel like we ask you to do a lot of things at the end of the podcast: rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends. But the most important thing, I think, though all of those extremely important, you should do them, is, of course,
we can all agree, keep it
you
spooky.
You must keep it spooky.
Please.
Bye.
Bye.
Ruined is a Radio Point production with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, and Houston Snyder. Recorded and edited by Kat Iosa.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.